Listening to KVOO Portland, 90.7 FM in the Portland metro area and all over the world at kboo.fm.
Tune in the fourth Monday of each month at 11:30 a.m. to Voices for the Animals.
We discuss the latest news and trends in the animal world.
And the role of activism surrounding the issues of animal rights.
That's Voices for the Animals at 11:30 a.m. on the fourth Monday of each month on KBOO.
You probably know that KBOO Community Radio is listener-sponsored. But did you know that 80% of our funding comes from donations from listeners just like you? You can always make a donation to keep KBOO independent and non-commercial at kboo.fm/give. But right now, during our end-of-the-year drive, is the perfect time to contribute. Help us reach our goal of $70,000 by December 31st. Make your tax-deductible year-end donation at kboo.fm/give today. And thanks.
Radio is the sound salvation. Radio is cleaning up the nation.
Hello, and you are listening to Eco Justice Radio, a project of SoCal 350 Climate Action. Our show presents environmental and climate stories from a social justice frame, featuring voices not necessarily heard on mainstream media. Eco Justice Radio acknowledges that we record the show on the traditional territory of the Tongva and all of their relatives. Welcome, I am Jessica Aldridge. On today's show, a vessel for empowerment, overcoming superstorm and petrochemical invasions. I will be interviewing Rochetta Ozane, founder of the Vessel Project of Louisiana and Clean Energy Organizing Director with Healthy Gulf. Rochetta Sibley Ozane has over a decade of experience representing organizations as a community outreach specialist. Not only is she the founder, director, and CEO of the Vessel Project of Louisiana, she is the Clean Energy Organizing Director with Healthy Gulf for the Southwest Louisiana and Southeast Texas region. Rochetta is also She Leads Fellow alum and Environmental Justice Coordinator for the Power Coalition of Equity and Justice, where she empowers women of color to go out into their communities and make positive change. The The Gulf Coast of Louisiana and Texas face a petrochemical and fracked gas export boom. Superheat-charged hurricanes strike almost every year. As a result, Black, Indigenous, people of color, and low-income communities face an interrelated number of issues, including environmental justice, voting suppression, and access to housing, healthcare, clean water, energy, and safe, fresh produce, just to name a few. Our guest, Roichetta Ozane, started the Vessel Project of Louisiana to assist the most vulnerable communities by meeting their emergency needs in times of crisis. And as an organizer for the nonprofit Healthy Gulf, her work includes stopping a rush of new fossil fuel facilities slated for the Southwest Louisiana region. If the fossil fuel companies get their way, 17 new liquefied natural gas export terminals will be built nationwide, most of them in the Gulf of Mexico, which will guarantee more climate chaos for the entire planet. Roichetta's mix of building community, inspiring mutual aid, and organizing in solidarity with environmental justice leaders and regional and national nonprofits brings hope to overcoming this managed chaos. Thank you for tuning in to Eco Justice Radio and our show, A Vessel for Empowerment, Overcoming Superstorm and Petrochemical Invasions. I am your host, Jessica Aldridge, and it is my honor to welcome our guest, Roichetta Ozane, founder of the Vessel Project of Louisiana and community organizer with Healthy Gulf. Welcome to Eco Justice Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Roichetta, you are a very busy person. You are out in the community every day. You are the founder of the Vessel Project, an organizer for Healthy Gulf, and a fellow for the Power Coalition for Equity and Justice. You live in Southwest Louisiana, and that's an area that's slated to become the LNG, liquefied natural gas capital of the world. It's also one of the poorest areas in the United States for income, education, and healthcare. But the community is rising up. And you are part of that empowerment. So I have so many questions for you. But first, let's talk about the area where you're at. Many people are familiar with New Orleans, Louisiana, but this is not New Orleans. Paint us a picture of Lake Charles in Southwest Louisiana. Who lives there and what is the landscape?
Okay, so Lake Charles, Louisiana is in Southwest Louisiana. It's right on the border of Southeast Texas in Southwest Louisiana. And I like to say Southwest Louisiana because even though Lake Charles is the major city, the smaller communities like Westlake, Sulphur, Cameron, which is in Cameron Parish, then those small communities always get left out, but they feel the brunt of the same stuff that we're dealing with in Lake Charles. And so Lake Charles is almost split in the population. It's about 47% African-American, with the majority of the African-American population living in North Lake Charles, which is a predominantly Black, low-income part of the city. It's about 90% Black. And of that 90%, it's about 27% of those African-Americans who are African descent. It's a very poor area. Whereas South Lake Charles is wider, wealthier community. And when you come here to Lake Charles and to Southwest Louisiana, you will see that we are still very much in recovery mode from the disasters that we faced in the last couple of years. But we are very, very much important. We get left out a lot of the conversations for Louisiana because everyone is so focused on New Orleans. But I like to say that New Orleans is a city, Louisiana is the state, and there are several other cities in the state. In fact, Lake Charles is very important to Louisiana and the rest of the nation. I mean, we have the 12th largest port in the nation, and our port takes in and sends out so many goods, dry goods, rice, beans. We also export things from our port and bring things in to the state. And so we're very important. And again, we are full of petrochem facilities, LNG facilities, and we have several more proposed. So just think of the things that you love about New Orleans is very much Louisiana. It's a state thing. It's a culture thing. And so we have those very same things here in Lake Charles. Crawfish, blue crabs, Gulf shrimp. We celebrate Mardi Gras. I have a big Mardi Gras celebration where folks come from all over the world, just like they do for New Orleans. We have other big events here in Lake Charles, such as, you know, in the month of May, we have Downtown at Sundown, where folks come from different states to see us. We have beaches here in Lake Charles. So it's a beautiful area. You know, I always encourage folks to come here and see. Come here and see what Lake Charles has to offer.
Mm-hmm. And then this beauty in Lake Charles and the surrounding area, you had mentioned that these fossil fuel companies, right? So there's this beauty of the land there, but then there's like 24 plus fossil fuel and petrochemical companies, correct?
Right. And so, yes, we are overflowing with oil and gas industry. And it's funny because, you know, whenever I talk about the beauty and the landscape and the things that we love so much, this is a sportsman's paradise state, you know, for the state. That's our theme. We're a sportsman's paradise, but yet you come to our beaches and you want to just see the sunset or the sunrise and enjoy the sand and the water. When you look across the water, you see several industry right across the water, right next to you. When you're crossing the bridge, you see industry. To get to Cameron Parish, you have to cross a ferry. Once you cross the ferry and you get into Cameron, you see Cameron LNG. You know, right there across the border is Port Arthur, Texas, which is our sister city, except it's more predominantly Black for the entire city, very poor, but they have just as much industry as us. And so depending on where you are in Lake Charles, if you're at the top of the 210 bridge and you look across the Gulf, you can almost see the industry that Port Arthur has. And when you combine all of that together, it's just, it looks like massive destruction waiting to happen. And so that's part of the reason why folks don't want to come here to enjoy our beaches, because, you know, not only do you see all that industry, but you also smell the chemicals that they're releasing into the air. You smell all the different gases that are being released. You know, the town I live in is Sulphur. I don't live in Lake Charles. I live in Sulphur, Louisiana. And it has its name for a reason. You know, going from Sulphur to Lake Charles, you smell, you know, rotten eggs. You smell chlorine from the chlorine plant. You smell all sorts of smells, you know. But those aren't even the worst things, because the worst ones are the things we can't smell, right? And so see flares and you see big fires in the sky, but some of those flares we can't see.
And I want to get into that. I want to get into that in a moment and tell our listeners, stay tuned, because we're going to talk about these flares. We're going to talk about making the invisible visible. One of the things that I think people are familiar with in that area are the storms. We see these hurricanes happening, and we see it on national television, but there's a lot of other storms that happen. What is the storm situation in Southwest Louisiana and Southeast Texas, and why is it important for us to understand that when and how it affects the environment and affects all these chemical industries?
Right. So you know how you go to states where it snows a lot, and if you're from the South, because we're from the South, right? And so whenever I talk to like my family and friends up North, and we say, you know, snow is predicted. So they close schools, they close everything down because there's snow coming in. We're not used to snow. We don't have chains on our tires. We're not used to it. And they're like, oh, we get so such and such inches of snow and we're fine or whatever. It's the same thing with the rain here in Louisiana. When folks come to Louisiana and they see the rain, they always think, is a hurricane coming? Is it? No, it's just a regular rainy day. That's just the type of rains that we get. You know, it's always a thunderstorm, flash flood warnings all the time, especially from June 1st to November 1st, which is hurricane season. So every rainstorm is not a hurricane. But, you know, to someone who doesn't live here, it's almost the equivalent, because you will have pictures the next day of folks with, you know, down limbs or shutters blown off or trash cans blown away. We have what we call the the trash bin test, you know, how far did your trash bin blow away this time? So, yeah, so our storms, specifically in the last approximately 20 years, have, you know, increased in intensity. And we know that's because of the amount of industry that's come here in those last few years. And we are still recovering. I mean, even back as far as Hurricane Rita, we still have folks who never fully recovered or never returned home from that. And that was back in 2005. So imagine 2020 and 2021, you have a pandemic. Then you have two major hurricanes, Laura and Delta. You have winter freeze Uri. And then you have what our mayor of Lake Charles is called a biblical flood, a hundred year flood. Where places in Southwest Louisiana that had never flooded before flooded. And so if folks didn't lose their home to the hurricanes or the freeze, they lost it to the flood. And if that wasn't enough, a couple of months later, we had a tornado to hit in South Lake Charles. And so everyone was feeling the effects of these natural disasters. And folks started, you know, saying, wait a minute, you know, something isn't right. This is Louisiana. This is the South. Yes, we're used to rain. Yes, we're used to hurricanes. But for us to get this many natural disasters of different types in less than a year, something is going on.
And when this happens, it's not only the people living there that end up being disrupted and sometimes losing their homes or not having a secure place to live or food to find, but it's also affecting the chemical companies that are there. And is that releasing potential chemicals into the environment, toxins into the environment?
Yes. And so whenever these industries, you know, they operate on power, gas, and water, just like we do at our homes. And so whenever the power is out, because most of the time when we just get just a regular rainstorm, the power goes out. And so even if they're on generators or whatever, if they lose power for a few seconds, then they have to get back online. And they have to make up for whatever time that they lost. And so, you know, whenever you have something like a hurricane where, you know, everything is off grid, you know, several power lines are down, you know, the gas is off, the water is off, all of that affects how the plants operate. And, you know, we had, after the storms, we normally have some sort of chemical release from the plants. Westlake Chemical had two incidents following, you know, the two hurricanes. BioLab had an incident after the hurricanes, Indorama, Firestone. And so those directly affect us because they're already polluting. And so when you add in the natural disaster and the way the wind is blowing and the flooding that occurs, it's just more released into the atmosphere and more released into our waterways, you know. And it's just, I'm not a scientist, I'm not a doctor, so I don't have the medical terms and the scientific terms for what's going on. I just know that as a person who lives here and a person who works on the front lines, I know what we see and I know how it looks at these industry after a storm. It's just like, you know, with our home, they're in our neighborhoods. So the same way the trees are falling on our roofs and our stuff is blown around, the same things is happening at those buildings, and they, exactly, you know, have to get back online and everything as well. And the folks that work there are human, but you know, a lot of those operators and the big folks that work there, they can't leave. They're stuck there. Their families have to evacuate, but they have to stay there at those facilities to try to protect whatever it is that they're making and make sure that they stay online and that they don't go offline for too long. So all of it has so many different effects, environmental effects. It affects the people who work there. It affects their families, you know. So it's just not good for any of us. We just don't need any more. We already deal with so much from what we have.
I want to talk about the Vessel Project, you know, and what the Vessel Project's purpose is. How did it start? And what are the services that you provide?
So the Vessel Project is my mutual aid organization that I started after all of the storms that we had, the two hurricanes and then winter freeze Uri. And so I started the Vessel Project because I am a single mom of six and I was struggling to stay afloat after the hurricanes. I had lost everything. I was going back and forth from Houston, staying in a hotel, trying to come back and work and get my children back to school. And so people don't understand that here in Louisiana, I mean, schools were closed from March 15th until school started again for the 2020-2021 school year. But kids in Southwest Louisiana were out of school from March the 15th all the way up until October. And then we went back to school for a brief period, and another hurricane hit, and our kids were out of school again until Thanksgiving. And then it was Thanksgiving break and then Christmas break. And then we came back and we were out again for a freeze. So between 2020 and 2021, our children did not get much school at all. And so I was dealing with that with my children, trying to keep them as involved and engaged with school stuff as I could with everything that was going on, but also trying to be cognizant of the fact that they were dealing with just as much as we were as adults. And so while trying to deal with my children, trying to stay afloat, I was like, wait a minute, I'm not the only one who lives here. There has to be somebody else struggling just as much as me. And so I started reading Facebook posts of people saying, you know, this many people are sleeping under the bridge, folks have tents in their yards. And I went out to see for myself, because, you know, different people were arguing back and forth, no, that's not true, nobody's in a tent. And I went out to see for myself, and I saw it. And so I started asking the folks, you know, how are you going to survive like this? What is your plan? And I was just kind of doing it, you know, not trying to do anything big. I just wanted to know what were people going to do, because I really was at a point to where I felt like I needed to move back to my home state of Mississippi. I'm originally from Mississippi. And I was like, I got to get out of Louisiana. It's too much happening. I don't know how I'm going to recover. I got all these children, so I'm going to go back home. And folks were saying, I don't know, but I'm not going anywhere. Louisiana is home. You know, I'm going to stay here. I don't care how many hurricanes. And I was like, okay, well, that sounds kind of strange. You love this place that much, you're going to stay here, you know, even if something else happened. And so the winter freeze was announced. And then I was like, wait a minute, folks are in tent. They're going to freeze to death. So I went out and I started paying for people hotel rooms, because I didn't want them freezing to death in those tents. Posted on social media, if you know anybody who's in a tent or, you know, don't have safe shelter, I'm paying for them a hotel room. Now, remember, I'm a single mom. I was very poor. I was only a assistant teacher at the school, so I wasn't making much money at all. But we had gotten the stimulus checks, and so I was like, I'm going to use this stimulus to give back to the community. And I was swiping my card. I was like, wait a minute, this card is going to run out of money. And so I found myself like asking the hotel clerks, like, you know, if it declined, I promise I'm going to get the money and come back, but these people need somewhere to stay. And so as I was posting it and saying that and being worried about not being able to pay, folks were sending money to my Cash App, my Venmo, my PayPal. They were like, I'll pay for two rooms, I'll pay for a room. I got free rooms at Cachada, I got free rooms at L'Auberge, I got free rooms at whatever casino. And it was really community. The community stepped up, and we ended up putting over 300 people in hotels across Louisiana, Mississippi, and Texas, because our residents from Southwest Louisiana were everywhere. You know, they had evacuated and weren't able to return. So they were in Mississippi and Texas as well. And both those states felt the effects of Winter Storm Uri. So we couldn't leave our residents who had evacuated because of hurricanes and were now facing a freeze. We couldn't leave them out. So that's really how Vessel Project got started. But once I put the people in the hotel rooms, I could not consciously send them back to the streets with nothing. And so I started case managing, asking folks, you know, what do you need to be made whole again? How can I help you? What is your most emergency need? And folks had, like, some folks had simple things, you know, such as clothes and shoes for their children, diapers, formula. But some people needed help finding somewhere to stay, first month rent, deposit, whatever. And I just started doing it. And you would call or text or send a message on Facebook and say, this is what I need. I would post it without posting your name and say, I have a single mom of three. She needs, you know, first month rent for a place. She lost everything in a hurricane. And someone would send the money and I would pay the rent. And that's just how it kept going. I was literally a vessel. The blessings were just flowing through me to the person who needed it. And that's how the name came about.
You're a vessel. That's beautiful. We're going to take a break real quick. We're going to talk about honoring the dignity and empowering those that you're helping through the Vessel Project. And then we're going to get back to that conversation about the LNG facilities and the flaring that is happening and the things we can't see. So everyone stay tuned and we'll be right back.
Hey listeners, quick break here. We hope that you're enjoying Eco Justice Radio. Stay connected by subscribing to Eco Justice Radio on all major podcast apps and visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, to check out previous shows and guests and get connected with us on social media. Today, you are listening to A Vessel for Empowerment, Overcoming Superstorm and Petrochemical Invasions, with host Jessica Aldridge and guest Roy Shetta Ozane, founder of the Vessel Project of Louisiana and Clean Energy Organizing Director with the Healthy Gulf.
Raishetta, we were just speaking about the Vessel Project, your volunteer-based community organization that you founded. And I want to know, through the programs, the support that you're able to provide, how do you do so in a way that honors the dignity and empowers the people that you are supporting?
So the mission of the Vessel Project, actually, what you just stated. Well, I want to make sure that people keep their dignity, that they're able to advocate for themselves. I don't want to feel like a big agency who's going in and taking over and doing things for them. So a lot of times, the way that I assist people is through direct cash assistance. You know, they say, you know, my rent is due. I need help buying milk. I need help with diapers. I need help with food. And I send them the money through Cash App, Venmo, PayPal. And they go out and they purchase the things that they need or buy the things that they need. They send me the receipt, and that's how it goes, you know. And that's what I advocate for daily. Agencies and industries and organizations who say that they care about BIPOC communities and care about frontline communities have to start trusting the folks in the communities. We live here. We're the closest to the issue. That means we're the closest to the solution. And so if you trust us to help you with the solution, you also have to trust us to take care of our needs. And that means putting cash into our hands and allowing us to go and get the things that are important to us. You can't assume what I need just from looking at me. And so give me the opportunity to say, this is what I need, and let me go and get that. But give me the resources to be able to do that for myself. Because if you teach someone to do it for themselves, or you allow them to do it for themselves, they feel like they've accomplished something and they want to continue to get that feeling. But if you're always taking care of someone, it's like a child. They're not children that you're taking care of. You know, they just want a hand. They just want you to help them. And so that's what I advocate for daily, for folks to be able to get the assistance that they need by providing them with resources, direct cash or educational material, whatever I can to empower them and allow them to keep their dignity.
You're also a community organizer for the Louisiana nonprofit Healthy Gulf. What is the mission of the Healthy Gulf?
So I am the organizing director for Southwest Louisiana and Southeast Texas for Healthy Gulf. And before I tell you the mission for Healthy Gulf, I'm also the environmental justice organizer for the Power Coalition. And so all of those are, you know, big titles: clean energy organizer, environmental justice organizer. But I like to say that, you know, I live in the community. And so I'm just a community organizer across the board, and what I do is organize in my community to help folks in the best way possible, to show them that I care about you. I want to make you whole, and I want you to see that I care about you, and I want you to see that I'm not someone who's parachuted in. I live in this community. My children live in this community, and so that's why I'm helping you. I'm not representing an agency or an organization when I'm here. And so the mission for Healthy Gulf is that their purpose is to collaborate and serve communities who love the Gulf of Mexico by providing the research, communications, and coalition building tools needed to reverse the long pattern of overexploitation of the Gulf's natural resources. So that's their mission. But you cannot meet that mission or ask folks to help you to fight against oil and gas build out if their most essential needs aren't met. You know, we are not a one issue per people. We are a people with several issues. And so we have to realize the intersectionality of issues that we face in our communities. And that's where I come in. I like to call myself a dot connector because I connect the dots between all the issues from social injustice, environmental injustice, racial injustice. I connect all of those dots, climate injustice, in order to make a person whole. And when you make them whole, they're willing to fight for what's right and what they need in their community. So if I can provide you with food, safe shelter, safe water, the things that your children need, when it's time to go to a hearing, when it's time to comment, when it's time to be a standing declarant, you're ready, because you're ready to fight for your community. You have all of the tools that you need. You feel safe. Your belly is full. You have somewhere safe to live, and so you can fight. But if you're hungry, you're not you don't care about another plant being built. You're focused on what you're going to eat, right? I never could take a test in school when I was hungry because I was like worried about what I wanted to eat. I didn't know what was on that test. And so, you know, it took years for the school systems to realize, wait, maybe we should let the kids eat a snack while they take the test. You know, maybe that'll work. But that's how it's exactly how it is with folks. If I'm focused on a major need, I can't even be worried about what else is going on in my life. And that's exactly what's going on right now with the energy bills. You know, everybody now is calling me. I'm getting so many calls for assistance with the light bill. That's what's on people's mind.
Yeah.
It's either their light bill or the price of gas at the pump. All of that is directly related to industry. And so that's how I'm communicating with folks right now. You shouldn't be paying that high price at the pump. You know why? It's because we're exporting so much. That's why you're paying that high price.
What is happening with the LNG facilities? Because it's the export capital of the world. What's taking place in that, in this area?
Well, you mean Southwest Louisiana is the export capital of the world? Yes, and so we are exporting more because our governor and the president was like, okay, Europe needs gas. Let's export as much as we can. Let's continue to give out permits. You get a permit so that we can export more. So we, you know, everybody is all gung-ho LNG because it has that word natural in it, when we know there's nothing natural about it, and acting like as if it's going to help the folks in Europe when it's not. It takes 3 to 5 years for a terminal to come online. 3 to 5 years. By the time they come online here, we've signed our death certificate while they're, you know, coming online. They're getting their funding. They're getting all of their permits. By the time we do that, Europe will have transitioned. But yet, we will still be incurring the cost of what we signed now. And so that's what we're trying to say. No, we need to be moving towards a just transition. When you think about the timeline, it's 2023. We're not talking about light years from now. We're not talking 10, 20 years from now anymore. It's happening now. We're talking in the next 3 to 5 years. We could see that all of our renewable energy sources, we no longer have access to. All of our fossil fuels, the amount of methane that's being produced from these facilities, and if all of them get their permits and they're all online in the next 3 to 5 years, do you know the detriments of that for Southwest Louisiana? We won't even be talking about if you want to continue to live here. You know, that's a question everybody asks after the hurricane. Why do you stay there? We won't have a choice because it will no longer exist. There will not be able to be any human life here if we continue to give all of these LNG facilities, all of these petrochem facilities permits. And they're all in such close proximity to each other. And they're all releasing all of this stuff into the air right there together. It's just not going to be good for anyone. We have the highest cancer rates. We have it's crazy that the South, you know, all along the Gulf Coast, the same area that's lasting everything is the same area that has the most oil and gas and LNG. And oil and gas has billions and billions of dollars. But yet we're the poorest state.
Exactly.
You know, we have the lowest education rates. We have the highest cancer rates. But yet we have all of this oil and gas. So who is
the richest industry, right?
Who is industry helping?
Yeah. Yeah. So every night, the people of Southwest Louisiana get to experience what y'all call the second sunrise. What's that?
Yes. So it's the flares from the plant. And so one of the plants in particular, Indorama, it's in Sulphur. It's on city service in Sulphur. But you can see that flare all the way to Lake Charles. If you're coming from Lafayette and you're headed on I-10 West going towards Texas, you can see that flare. And until you all cross that Texas border, you can still see that flare. That's how big the flare is. Now, it doesn't flare as big anymore because we've been on them. You know, there have been hearings. We've appeared. There have been lawsuits. And so now they don't flare as much as they were. Whenever that article came out, they have tried to do better. But, you know, again, remember, you don't always see what they're flaring. So we may not be able to see the big flare, but I just can't imagine that they just all of a sudden stopped completely and they're still producing and making the same stuff. They paid a little fine and stopped completely. No, they just made it more invisible so that we can't see what they're doing.
How do you make the invisible visible? Because the flare is what we can see, right? But then, as you're saying, there's other chemicals that are being released. So how do you see the invisible?
Right. So we have, with Healthy Gulf, we have technology such as the FLIR camera, and we have specialists who come out and take pictures. Those cameras can see what the naked eye cannot see. And so they take pictures and we show them to folks. We just did a toxic tour here. We had folks from all different agencies. Ethan was here. But we took folks on a tour to see. We call it a toxic tour to go see the plants. And we wanted them to see what they could see with their eyes and then look into the camera and see the difference. And we had a scientist with us who could explain to them that what you're not seeing is more harmful than what you're seeing. And we know a lot of the plants say, you know, when we're flaring, that's a good thing. That means if the systems are working correctly, that's what's supposed to be happening. But we know that if that flare has black smoke, that means you're burning something you're not supposed to be burning, because the smoke shouldn't be black. Or when it's so much steam around that flare, or when it's big, thick clouds of white around the flare, we know what to, you know, we can tell when something's abnormal about it, but those cameras show you everything. And Healthy Gulf scientist Naomi Yoder explains, you know, what you're seeing when you're looking into those cameras. So that's one way. The other way is through air monitors. Healthy Gulf, again, is trying to get a grant to put air monitors throughout the community to test the air, to see, you know, what folks are breathing. Because the plants say one thing, but we know when we feel sick, we know when we walk out of our door and we feel dizzy, because you can't always smell it, but you can feel different. You know, we understand that our children here have more asthma than anybody. And the black community already has a high rate of asthma and heart disease and cancer. So, you know, put that together with what they're experiencing from the industry.
I think that's a great segue to say, what's a sacrifice zone? Because what you're explaining right now to me sounds like a sacrifice zone. What is, yes, a sacrifice zone? And how does that play out?
So a sacrifice zone, by our definition, is, you know, communities of color, BIPOC communities, Black, Indigenous, people of color communities that are already poor, already high health risk, already very, very few resources, you know. And so when investors come in, you know, you're already struggling, barely making it in an area where you know, you're barely living, and they offer you a few thousand dollars and you accept it and you move away. Or you don't accept it and they don't offer you money, but yet they build industry anyway and they say, prove it. Prove that we're the ones giving you cancer. You know, you're black. You have a higher chance of cancer anyway. So how do you know that cancer came from us? How do you know that asthma came from us? You know, and so it's them versus us. So they feel like, well, we can put it in those communities. They're not going to fight back. They can't read. Their education rates are low. And so that's why we have to start at the community level with fighting against industry. We have to educate people. We have to connect dots for people to see how the industry is affecting them. We have to provide resources. We need health centers in the community. We need community gardens. We need access to clean water. We need grocery stores in the community. We need to make sure that kids can get to school safely. We need access to public transportation. So when you empower the community that they want to build in, that they want to make a sacrifice for, when you empower them, then they fight for themselves because they see, wait a minute, with just a little bit more, I could do this. It's the same thing that happened when we got the stimulus checks and when folks were getting extra money for unemployment. Folks had an aha moment. Wait, you telling me with just a few more $100 a month, I can actually pay my own rent? I can afford to pay my light bill? I can afford to get groceries for my children? They felt empowered. And we saw a mass exodus from the business world. Folks started their own businesses. They left the corporate world and they started their own businesses. And folks left these fast food restaurants that were paying them pennies, that didn't want to increase the minimum wage, because again, Louisiana is the lowest in everything, so we have the lowest minimum wage. Folks started leaving those dead-end jobs and they started their own businesses because they felt empowered when they were getting just a few extra dollars. And so that's what we want to do. We want to start at the community level with the folks that are most impacted, empower them, give them resources, give them funds, and help them to advocate for their own communities.
Well, we're going to bring it right back from the break here in a second. I want to talk about some of the misnomers about if these LNG, these liquefied natural gas facilities are built, it's going to bring jobs and there's going to be money for the schools. And, you know, I want to talk about that. And I want to talk about on the ground organizing. So we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Hey listeners, quick break here. We hope that you're enjoying Eco Justice Radio. Stay connected by subscribing to Eco Justice Radio on all major podcast apps and visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, to check out previous shows and guests and get connected with us on social media. Today, you are listening to A Vessel for Empowerment, Overcoming Superstorm and Petrochemical Invasions, with host Jessica Aldridge and guest Roisheta Ozane, founder of the Vessel Project of Louisiana and Clean Energy Organizing Director with the Healthy Gulf.
Roisheta, we have been talking about the LNG facility build out, the liquefied natural gas build out in Southwest Louisiana and Southeast Texas. Now, there are people that say, look, this build out of this natural gas facility, it's great because it's going to promote local hiring and that there's money that's going to be put back into the community, into schools and nonprofit organizations. What would you say to this?
I would say that the lie detector test determined that's a lie. So, you know, the thing about industry, they like to wave these shiny things in front of community folks' faces whenever they're at the initial hearings and they're trying to get their permits and stuff, and they make all these shiny promises, and you know, folks are like ooh and ah and ooh and ah. And so even Commonwealth, who is not even here yet, doesn't have the permit, isn't operating at all, but whenever we had the storm, they came out and they were giving out food, you know, after the hurricane. They were giving people oodles and noodles, you know, what those cost, 20 cents a pack. Now don't get me wrong, you know, people were in need and folks needed that, but you know, what is your life worth? Because we actually had folks at the hearing that were advocating for Commonwealth because Commonwealth came out and gave them packs of noodles and bottles of water after the hurricanes. And so, you know, that's my question. What is your life worth? Is your life worth a $20,000 donation to a library in a community where those kids don't even have a grocery store to get fresh produce? So do you think those kids are concerned about reading if they're hungry? No. And then $20,000 is pennies to an industry that saves billions in taxes. If they would just pay a percentage of the taxes that they don't pay, imagine what that we could do in the community. And so it's things like that that are all facades. You know, if you come here and you look around the parking lot at the license plate, you will see more Alabama, Texas, Georgia, Arkansas, Mississippi than you will Louisiana, because they hire from outside of the community. They don't want to empower the community, because again, you empower the folks in the community, their eyes are open and they see, wait a minute, something's not right. I smell a rat. I want to fight against this. So they don't want to empower those folks. Folks in the community, you know where, how they get a job at the industry? They have to go and work for contract companies like Turner. They go and they become contract workers. They go to Sewella and they get the, you know, their welding and P-TECH or whatever trainings, and they have to go and work for contract agencies. You know, some folks have been working in industry for years under contract, but they don't work directly for the industry. So whereas the industry may be paying this amount for that job, they're only making a portion of that, because part of it has to go to the contract company. So it's all facades. You know, they build a community center in the community, but okay, there's a community center, but yet folks' light bill has increased. You know, some of the light bills I've seen lately, $500, $800, when it was just $100 or $200 a few months ago, it's almost triple that. And, you know, you have these companies right there in your neighborhood. Can you go knock on their door and say, hey, can you help me with this light bill? No. So it's things like that that they just say they're going to do, but they don't actually do whenever they come online. It's all a facade.
So what about the lawsuits? When lawsuits happen, they can bolster on the ground organizing. Do you think that these lawsuits can stop the gas and oil projects based on adhering to regulations or social justice infractions?
Yes, I think it can stop it. We've seen it with the Wallace Grain Elevator. We've seen it with Formosa. We've seen it happen through other, in other states with other projects. Yes, lawsuits are very imperative and very important. And it's very important that local folks and frontline folks and frontline communities are parties to the lawsuits, because those lawsuits is what protects them and what protects their rights. It's several steps in stopping industry. You know, we may not be able to stop those industries that are already operating, but we can stop more industry from coming. And once we get those stopped from coming and they see that we're no longer going to just sit idly by, then the ones that are here, they either get right or get left. And that means you either get right, do what you're supposed to be doing, be in compliance, stop harming these communities, pay some taxes, or we protest against you and we continue until you're out of here. But when, once we get them out of here, then there's the question of, what do you do with the tanks? What do you do with the land that they were on? Because you can't do anything else with that land. That's another reason why we don't need any more. We have enough land that we can no longer use because of what was produced there, you know. And so the lawsuits are very important, but showing up at the hearings is important. Commenting during comment periods is important. You know, all of those things are important to stopping industry. It all goes together.
And maybe remind, just reiterate, why is race the central theme in the injustices that are happening in Southwest Louisiana? And if we don't focus on race, nothing will change.
Race is because, again, this is the South. And so a lot of the laws and policy are still in Jim Crow time. They're outdated laws. They're outdated policy that should have went out with slavery, but you know, it got worse after slavery. We won't have any history lessons, but that's just what it is. It's still very much segregated and separated. Like I told you about Lake Charles, it's about 47% black, but 90% of the black community lives on one side of town, and that side of town has no grocery stores. They only have one health center, which is that it's a community health center. So the lines are long every day. Folks are trying to see the doctor, trying to see the dentist. When they close, there's no other place for them to go. No access to public transportation, you know. So, and those are the communities where industry go and leave their letters on the door and say, hey, you want to sell your property? We buy ugly houses and all of this other stuff, so they can buy up their property and build more industry. We saw it happen to Mossville, which Mossville is a predominantly black community that was founded by slaves. And we saw Sasol come. We all watched as all these environmental agencies told Mossville, we're not going to let this happen to you. And what happened? Sasol built in that community anyway. And if you didn't take the buyout, guess what? Those folks are living with whatever Sasol is dishing out right now. And we just refuse to allow that to happen again.
So they're living with what in Mossville? What happened?
So Sassol is in Mossville. And if you don't know Mossville exists, you won't know, because they changed the name of the streets. All you see when you drive through there now is Sassol. Sassol owns so much of the land. But there are still community folks who live there who are still fighting for a fair buyout, because they can't afford, with the money they're being offered, to move and live comfortably as they've lived for 30, 40 plus years in Mossville. And the folks that are there, again, are predominantly Black, low income, senior citizens, mostly, you know, retired folks now, because no young people are living there anymore. It's people who, you know, didn't take the buyout and stood firm to their beliefs, but Sassol is still operating all around them.
What is Sassol?
So Sassol, oh my goodness, it's a master industry in Mossville. Well, it probably says Westlake on their address, because again they changed all of that up, but it's Integrated Energy and Chemical Company, and they're based out of South Africa. Like, they're not even the money that they're making from us is going to South Africa. If they again pay a portion of their taxes that they're saving, and that money they're saving, sending to South Africa, imagine what they could do for the communities of Westlake and Mossville. Where Sassol is on Sulphur Avenue in Westlake, there is a middle school down the street. There is two elementary schools in close proximity, not even 5 miles away, and the high school. Phillips 66 is right across the street from them. And there is a community of folks who live right there in between Sassol and Phillips 66, a true EJ community, where folks still have blue tarps on their roofs. They still have FEMA trailers in their yard that they're living in because they can't live in their home. Yet none of those execs from either of those facilities have come down, walked those streets and said, how can I help you? What do you need? But yet they're operating off of those folks' backs.
Instead, they try to buy them out.
And you know, it's funny, because when Sassol came, when there were rumors of Sassol coming, folks were trying to buy property right there because they thought Sassol was going to pay them this major money and they were going to, you know, make a profit. And they see that didn't happen. Those were the rumors. They were like, oh yeah, this big company from South Africa is coming. You better get you some land right here because they're going to be paying good, you know. And that's just not what happened.
Rochetta, you are also a fellow for the Power Coalition for Equity and Justice. Briefly tell us about your role and their vision.
So I started with the Power Coalition as a She Leads Fellow last year in 2021, and I finished my fellowship, and now I am employed with the Power Coalition. I do contract work for them as an environmental justice organizer, organizing in the environmental justice communities across the state of Louisiana, but specifically in Lake Charles. And so the Power Coalition is a Black woman-led ran organization. It was founded by Ashley Shelton, who actually has an extensive resume. She's done a lot of work in the nonprofit sector, helping several different organizations. But her mission was to find Black women and women of color who were already doing the work and support and fund them, because they were already doing the work. They just need support and funding. And that's how they found me. I applied to be a She Leads Fellow, and I was already doing Vessel Project stuff. I just continued to do it, and I let them know what I was doing, and they asked how could they fund the projects, and they put the money into my hands to do all the projects that I was doing in 2021 and 2022. And so that led into them wanting me to come and do some work with their organization. The mission of the Power Coalition is that they are a team of organizers who believe in the power of community and taking action. And their goal is to equip folks, like I said, especially Louisiana people, because they're based in New Orleans, with the knowledge and information that they need to find their voice and learn where and when to use it. And so we do that through the Get Out the Vote campaign, you know, getting out, making sure folks are registered to vote, they get to the polls, they're voting, making sure that we're very involved in legislation and policy making. We have representatives that are at the Capitol, you know, day to day, month to month, year round. And they're just very involved, very engaged, a lot of civic engagement in educating folks on what directly affects them and impacts their communities. So that's what we do.
We have a few minutes left here. For people who are listening that are truly inspired by your work, because I know I am, and these people that may want to apply the same sort of community outreach and empowerment that you are doing, what advice would you give them?
My advice is, normally when folks want to do the work that I'm doing, they're already doing it, and they probably feel like I felt when I started, that no one sees me. So my advice is just to continue doing the work. Whatever your passion is, whatever makes you get up out of bed in the morning and makes you go, continue to do that. You know, if that's helping your fellow man, if that's feeding the homeless, if that's registering people to vote, if that's going and chaining yourself to industry, do that, whatever that passion is, because someone is going to see you and someone is going to support you. And you may be alone. You may be alone when you do it. You may be alone in the room fighting, but you are not alone in this entire fight, because there are other people out there. And I always say that I'm everywhere. I'm not hard to find. I'm the only Rochetta in the world. I've looked, I've researched. So I always like to say, if you saw my name in the newspaper or on the bathroom stall, it was me. There's just no other me. I'm all over social media. Don't look at my TikToks, because my kids say they're horrible. But you can find me anywhere. My phone number is everywhere. And, you know, I'm just a genuine person. I help as many people as I can. And even though I live in an oil and gas state and I fight against industry every day, I have very little pushback, because folks normally like to sit down and have the conversation and see, where is her head at? What is she saying? And when they see, okay, she does want jobs here, because, you know, normally folks say, if you're fighting against industry, you don't want jobs. I want the exact opposite. I want to make sure that the industry that said they're going to hire you will hire you. You know, and so folks sit down and have conversations with me. I don't have any enemies. I'm everywhere. And so my goal, my mission is to empower folks, give people a voice, and make sure that people have their basic human needs met. That's safe water, food to eat, and healthy, safe shelter for them and their families.
And how do people find more information about the Vessel Project, about the work you're doing, to stay alert of any news? How do they find you, Rochetta, or the Vessel Project?
So the Vessel Project has a website. It's vesselprojectoflouisiana.com. vesselprojectoflouisiana.com. It's a long title, but that's the name of the organization, the Vessel Project of Louisiana. And I try to post updates on there and pictures of what we're doing, but you can also find us on Twitter, Vessel Project, Instagram, vessel.project, on Facebook, the Vessel Project of Louisiana. But we always have ways to volunteer. Right now I'm doing a summer feeding program where I'm feeding the community Monday through Friday, starting at 11 a.m. in North Lake Charles at Southwest Louisiana Health Center's parking lot. And we have a line of cars. So we start at 11. I give out 150 meals a day. And by 11:20, all the meals are gone. We know that's not nearly enough, but that's all we can do, because I'm a small organization and it's just me. I don't have, you know, any employees or anything. So we do as much as we can. So if you want to volunteer, if you want to donate, my phone number is 337-564-1254. My phone is always in my hand, because somebody's always calling. Or you can leave a message on the Vessel Project's website, Vessel Project Louisiana, vesselprojectoflouisiana.com, and I respond immediately, because that also goes to my phone.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much. And to our listeners, if you want to continue listening to the extended version of the show, please go to our website, ecojusticeradio.org, to check that out. And we'll continue the conversation. But for now, Rochetta, thank you so much for being on Eco Justice Radio and all the amazing work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, listeners, to check out the extended recording of this show or to explore other shows, subscribe to our podcast or visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org. This has been Eco Justice Radio and our show, A Vessel for Empowerment, Overcoming Superstorm and Petrochemical Invasions. Thank you to our guest, Roishetta Ozane of the Vessel Project and Healthy Gulf. And thank you to our listeners for joining us. Please connect with us on social media at EcoJustice Radio, SoCal 350, and Adventures in Waste. If you like what you heard and you want others to be informed, subscribe and share the episodes. You have been listening to Eco Justice Radio, a project of SoCal 350, created by Mark and JP Morse, executive producer Jack Eit, producer and co-host Jessica Aldridge, co-host Carrie Kim, and engineer and original music by Blake Quake Beats. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm.
By the mole in the ground.